We're live and we're local. It's a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, Brian Crapo and Danny Bettridge will be here to highlight the upcoming Family Discovery Day. We'll learn how small businesses can contract with the U.S. Forest Service. Joanne Flora from Reach will be here to highlight Disability Employment Awareness Month. Annie Bartholomew will be here with details about Friday the 13th KXLL activities. And we'll talk with Andy Klein about the Alaskan Brewing Company's new award. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more, right here on a Juno afternoon. Looking at weather for the rest of today, mostly clear with lows in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, mostly clear, highs around 50. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Felony and misdemeanor charges have been dropped against a Puebla woman who's a leader in efforts to abolish an annual fiesta in New Mexico, which celebrates a Spanish conquistador. The Santa Fe New Mexican reports prosecutors dropped charges against Jennifer Marley Tuesday, who was to appear in court on Wednesday. She's accused of hitting two police officers with a sign during a protest last month at the Entrada, which is a reenactment of Spanish conquest. Marley is a lead organizer of the grassroots group The Red Nation and is a student at the University of New Mexico. She has been a high-profile figure in working to end the event, which many say represents genocide of Native Americans. In an open letter after her arrest, Marley wrote the movement is not just about the Entrada, but about protecting Native land, livelihood, and sacred sites. The Red Nation's work includes addressing a number of indigenous issues. Protecting the Grand Canyon is important to a number of tribes, and there's often a divide between indigenous people, government agencies, and local landowners on its management. Utah Public Radio's Julie Kelso recently spoke with members of the Hualapai tribe about the importance of including traditional knowledge.
As you float down the Colorado River from Glen Canyon Dam to Lake Mead, River Right, the north side of the river, is owned and managed by the National Park Service, and River Left is managed by several groups, including the Hualapai and Havasupai Indian Nations. Kavoka Jackson, a member of the Hualapai tribe and graduate student at the University of Las Vegas, is currently researching methods to remove invasive plants while reestablishing native plants that are also culturally important.
To me, the Colorado River is really sacred, and it's held really close in my heart because on my reservation, we grew up along the Colorado River.
Tribes and federal agencies have collaborated to manage natural and cultural resources within the canyon. But cultural and institutional barriers can be much harder to cross than borders drawn on a map.
I think there's a big gap between traditional knowledge, the traditional ecological knowledge that tribes hold, versus the Western science, and they don't communicate, but I think they could hugely benefit each other.
Since Glen Canyon's construction, an annual monitoring trip is conducted by each tribe in the region to assess archaeological and botanical resources. Ethnobotanist for the tribe, Carrie Cannon, describes the significance of these trips.
To me, the goal of the trip oftentimes is more about the sharing of traditional ecological knowledge. Tribal people have their language and their ideologies and their own unique way of looking at the world and the names that they have for plants. They tell a story.
Collaborations between the federal government, state agencies, ecologists, and tribes had a rough start. But through many heated arguments and discussions, tribal knowledge has been included in the management of Grand Canyon resources. I'm Julie Kelso.
A university on the Northern Plains will use a gift to help Native students access higher education. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
An anonymous donor is pledging just over $4 million to South Dakota State University. The gift is designed to support a school initiative for tribal members. SDSU officials say most of the funds will go to build a new American Indian Student Center. South Dakota State President Barry Dunn says the building will cover about 15,000 square feet on the south edge of the campus in Brookings, South Dakota. $100,000 of the pledge is earmarked for scholarships for students from South Dakota's Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota tribe. The efforts are part of SDSU's Wakini initiative with the goal of increasing student numbers from the state's nine tribes. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are Brian Crapo and Danny Bettridge, here to talk about this Saturday's Family Discovery Day. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's just start off by telling me a little bit about what is each of your roles in Family Discovery Day this year.
My role primarily is publicity. That's why I'm here today, right? So yeah, I'm
check
on the Public Affairs Committee. Yeah, basically just getting the word out is my primary responsibility with this.
All right. Doing good so far. How about you, Danny?
And my role as presenter, I am presenting at two of the classes about
family history.
Fantastic.
Well, I definitely want to find out more about what it is. My understanding is that this is a faith-based event kind of centered on genealogy. Is that a fair description?
Well, the event is sponsored by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but it is not it's not faith-based in the sense of we're not going to be dealing with the theological aspects of why we do family history or anything like that.
Maybe a little bit.
Maybe some allusions to it.
Yes, would be good.
But primarily it's going to be about how to record your family history and maybe some research aids for whatever your purposes are.
Great. Yeah. So it's not exclusive to members of the church.
Not at all. This is a community event.
Those who love family history or genealogy, they're the ones that we especially want to invite, and those who want to learn about it.
Well said. Have you ever participated in Family Discovery Day before, or is this the first one?
This will be new for me.
And for
me. It's only our second annual, so I wasn't here for the first one, so I'll be excited to learn just like everybody else.
And that's the second time it's been here in Juneau, but Danny, you said it goes on worldwide.
Yes, it's a worldwide event that different places in the world have it at different times.
Well, would you please walk us through some of the Family Discovery Day activities? What should attendees expect?
Sure. So we're going to start off at 10 in the morning. Danny's going to do a presentation called Telling My Family Story, Get Started Now. So that's going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's going to be primarily about recording family experiences and stories and things like that.
That is correct. We'll have a booklet that people can actually record their family information in, and they'll be able to take that with them when they leave.
And do they need to bring anything with them, like background information or a family tree or something like that?
You don't need to bring anything, but maybe it'd be helpful. Danny, is there something that if you had that would be good to bring?
If you had a pedigree chart that with the information on it, that would help in filling out the booklet. But it's also something you can take the booklet and finish it at home. So just start thinking about your family, your parents, your grandparents, stories that you might want to record that you haven't recorded anywhere.
I see. So the purpose of this is kind of getting it all together in one place for posterity, so to speak?
Right. Yeah, it's so easy to lose track of meaningful events in our lives. You know, I remember listening to my grandfather tell about the first time he ever saw an airplane, you know, just little neat things like that. And, you know, I never took the time to record any of those. So, I mean, I should now, right?
But yes.
Yeah, but I could have videotaped him or whatever, but never did. Mm-hmm. So those things are at risk, of course, of getting lost if no action's taken. So hopefully if you come to this, you'll be able to get some tools at your disposal to help you record and preserve those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The second class that I will be teaching is about keeping my family story alive, so different methods or ways of recording the stories about families.
I found a lot of online resources associated with Family Discovery Day. Are there any in particular that you would want to recommend to our listeners? They want to find out more information.
I think the Juno Family History Center that we have at the LDS building across from Western Auto every Tuesday p.m. at 6:30 to 8 o'clock. We are open, and there's actually a new program that was just installed on our computers for family discovery is really fun. So we would invite anyone who is interested to come and participate in that. It's really a fun new thing that they've put on the computer.
Great. So the event is this Saturday, October 14th. There's two sessions. When and where and what time does everything get going?
So we start at 10 o'clock, and so 10 to 11, Danny's going to be doing the presentation on telling your family story. And then at the same time, in a different room, we're going to have a video presentation that is going to be comparing what we call the Big Four in websites, family history websites. Those are Ancestry, Find My Past, MyHeritage, and Family Search. So that's going to happen at the same time. And then at 11 to 12, the second part is that Danny's going to present is Keeping My Family Story Alive, the second part of that. And then if you missed the video presentation from the first hour, we'll be rerunning that again at 11 o'clock if you want to catch that.
And this is a free event.
Great.
It doesn't cost for anyone to come.
With refreshments. So it's bonus.
All right. Well, yeah, snacks are always a good draw. But this sounds like really interesting stuff. I'm glad that you guys are doing it. And thanks for playing a role in the organization. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we probably just want to include the address.
Yes,
we have two chapels in town, so we want to make sure that we're talking about the building that's at 10585 Glacier Highway. That's the newer building that's kind of across from Swampy Acres.
Okay, great. And anything else you'd like to add, Danny?
Just that we hope that everyone who's interested will come, because family history can be a really good hobby.
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like a fantastic event. Well, thank you both for being here and telling us all about it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shelley.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good to mom, blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Oh, no,
and here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 11th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of Eleanor Roosevelt, born in New York City, 1884, who was first lady longer than any other, and who, during her husband's presidency, campaigned hard on the issue of civil rights, which was not so popular back in the 30s and the 40s. Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "You wouldn't worry so much about what others think of you if you realized how seldom they do." It's the birthday of a physicist, Lewis Fry Richardson, born Northumberland, England, 1881, the first to apply mathematical techniques to predict the weather accurately. Wrote a book about it in 1922, Weather Prediction by Numerical Process. The problem with the theory was that it took him about 3 months to predict the weather for the next 24 hours. It had to wait until the advent of the computer to work. It's the birthday of Mason Weems, born in Maryland, 1759, who invented from whole cloth the famous story about George Washington cutting down his father's cherry tree with a hatchet and then being unable to lie about it. It was on this day, 1962, Pope John XXIII convened the first session of the Second Vatican Council, out of which came new church policies. The Roman Catholic Church would now allow Mass to be celebrated in languages other than Latin, and priests now faced the congregation, not the altar, and they set aside some of their ornate regalia, dressing more simply. Some liturgical music was updated to a more contemporary style, and now Catholics were allowed to visit other churches. They could attend weddings and bar mitzvahs and funerals of their non-Catholic friends and neighbors. It's the birthday of the novelist Elmore Leonard, born New Orleans, 1925, wrote some pulp westerns, then started writing crime fiction, more than 40 books in all, such as Get Shorty, Be Cool, and Rum Punch. He had 10 rules about writing, things like never open a book with weather, never use a verb other than said to mean dialogue, avoid detailed descriptions of characters, try to leave out the parts that readers tend to skip. And he said, my most important rule is, if it sounds like writing, I rewrite it. When he was asked why he writes about criminals instead of ordinary people, Elmore Leonard said, I just feel more secure in a situation where I know a gun can go off at any time if things get boring. And also, all villains have mothers. Here's a poem for today by Sally Van Doren, The Book of Usable Minutes. I heard the mother in the row behind me explain the safety instructions to her small, noisy children. I began to calculate how much time I have spent listening to an automated voice tell me how to identify the best exit routes, how to use the seat as a flotation device, how to place the oxygen mask over my mouth and continue breathing. If only the flight attendant could advise me on how to remember my father, how to say goodbye to my friend, how not to love my husband. The Book of Usable Minutes, a poem by Sally Van Doren from her collection Promise, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement. Available at locations throughout Southeast. More at seakliving.com.
The tobacco industry has led people to believe chewing tobacco is safe. They market their products to look like gum and mints and promote them in activities like baseball and hunting. The truth is, smokeless tobacco is addictive and causes oral, stomach, and pancreatic cancers. Don't be tricked by the tobacco industry. For free support quitting, call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
It is about 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here representing REACH, and they're here to talk about Disability Employment Awareness Month. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome. Could you both please introduce yourselves and briefly describe your role at REACH?
My name is Joanne Flora, and I'm the Fund Development Director for the organization. I'm Stephanie Whiteman. I am an employment specialist. What I do is I help individuals find employment in the community, maintain employment, and help them reach their goals through employment.
And what is REACH for those listening who may not know?
REACH is an organization that is just about to enter its 40th year of service in Southeast Alaska. We serve 7 communities. And what we do is provide a variety of services that includes FASD testing, infant learning programs. We have programs for children and adults. One of our big programs is the employment services, and we either do that through enterprises that we operate, shredding, our custodial services, the cafe in the federal building, or we help people get placed in employment in the community.
Now, October is Disability.
Canvas. I almost forgot the canvas. Yeah. Don't forget them.
Well, we never forget the canvas.
I know, yeah.
They're here on the show quite a bit, right. And we always try to mention the connection to REACH. October is Disability Employment Awareness Month. What are some of the myths about hiring people living with disabilities?
So some of the biggest myths are that all individuals with disability need accommodations in the workplace and that those accommodations are going to be pretty costly. However, the average expense for an accommodation is $500 or less. It's also a myth that people with disabilities are going to call in sick more. But however, they actually have some of the highest rates of employment. And they never generally call in sick. And most of the people I work with, I can't even remember last time they were sick. A few other one is that it'll increase your workman's comp insurance, which it will not. And a big one is also people think that under ADA that they can't fire an individual with a disability, which is absolutely not true. They have the same terms of employment if they have the same issues as anyone that you're hiring. You can terminate just as you would anyone else.
I think the important thing is to find them a placement that really suits their skill level.
Correct.
You know, make it easy for the employer to employ them.
Right. And that's kind of what you do, Stephanie.
Yeah. The supports we provide a lot of supports in the workplace. So we will provide job coaching. So if someone needs assistance, extra assistance learning their position, keeping up with their position, maybe they need help with the interoffice relationships, we provide someone that will be there on the job to help train them further than just a regular training.
And that service is not a cost to the employer.
No, it's completely free.
So what are some of the benefits to employers who hire people living with disabilities?
One of the things that people may not be aware is, you do have an increased market share. People that have disabilities, families of people with disabilities, they want to shop and they want to do a business with people who hire individuals with disabilities. So it really can help increase your business. As I said before, there is a reduced turnover rate. That is because these individuals that we work with, they want to work and they're going to do their best and they're not going to just leave if they find a better job. They're going to stick with you and they're very loyal.
You know, Stephanie, I want to interject here. I met with one of our individuals today about another topic who announced to me that he was just entering 17 years at Costco.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's 17. Wow.
17.
He has worked there.
This is a person with a developmental disability, and he has been employed for 17 years in the same place here in Juneau. And he loves his job, and he's happy to be there every day.
That's interesting. A friend and I were just talking about how Costco treats their employees pretty well and that we see the same people working there forever.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And congratulations to him on 17
that's
years.
Cool,
or her.
Huh?
Yes. And what are the benefits to the individuals who become employed?
Well, it's just the same benefits as it would be for all of us. Employment allows you more independence. We meet some of our closest friends through employment. It helps develop those natural supports. You can lean less on your family if you have these friendships and these supports that you can make in the workplace. It's really important for all of us to feel like we're part of our community. And employment is a huge way for all of us to learn about ourselves and to feel part of the community we live in.
Are there any specific events or activities associated with Disability Employment Awareness Month that you'd like to highlight today?
Well, this publicity that we're doing now is really the highlight of it. I mean, we're not doing a ticketed activity or something like that, or a fundraising event. But this is the month each year where we're able to go out to the business community and let them know that it's important to acknowledge people who are challenged and that they are willing to work and that they are able to work and that they will get support from our organization so that they can work. Having a job gives them independence and freedom and income, right? So they get out of their house, they do things like learn to use the bus system, or they learn how to walk from their home to their job. They learn a skill. They become more interactive with people in the community, because people with a disability can often become very isolated. These employment opportunities are huge benefits for them to get out and to be actually integrated, to be included, and to be a part of the community that they live in.
That's great. And how can employers or anyone who's listening right now find out more information or get in touch with individuals who are looking for employment?
Well, there's a few ways. First of all, you can just go on our website under the reachak.org. And if you just go under the employment services section, it will list all of the services we offer to employers. I mean, the great thing is if an employer calls us and tells us about a position, we can go in there and look through the 50 plus individuals that we work with, and we can find someone who will fit the needs of your business. And you can call us. You can call the main office, 586-8228, and ask to speak to someone in supported employment. You can call me directly. My direct line is 796-7210. The website has the most information on it.
And what is the address again, the website address?
ReachAK.org.
Great. Thanks. Well, this is all really interesting information, a lot of which I did not know before or hadn't thought of before. So I think it's so important that you're out here raising awareness this month and continue to do so. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or that you want to say today?
Well, I'd like to just thank the variety of employers in the community that are already employing people. It can be a little bit... It could make people feel a little bit insecure to take that leap, to go from hiring nothing but able-bodied individuals who are fully independent to making a commitment to somebody with a developmental or an intellectual disability. But those that have done that have been very satisfied and have found it to be a really good experience for them and their business and their customers. And we really appreciate that. I also wanted to mention that with the enterprises that we have, the shredding service, the custodial service, and the cafe in the federal building, those are stepping stones. Those are opportunities that we have to allow people an opportunity to develop some skills and confidence so that they can then move into jobs in the community. So many of them will start out with us in one of our, canned programs that we organized and we manage, and then move on to integrate into the community. So many parts of it are stepping stones. First they come in as individuals just receiving basic services, and they get some confidence, they get some training, they get a job with us, and then they move out, and next thing you know, they're working for somebody else. You may find them up at the tram or at the movie theater. I mean, they're all over town. So we'd really like to hear from employers anytime, but particularly in the month of October, because that's what this month is dedicated to.
Thank you. And how about you, Stephanie?
Well, I would, of course, like to thank the employers. We have people working in over 25 businesses in Juneau, and everyone that we work with is really passionate about it, and they wouldn't keep hiring and employing if it wasn't working and if they didn't have as much to offer as anyone else. That's the biggest thing, is someone with a disability can be just as great, even better in ways at a job than anyone.
Great. Well, thanks again, both of you, for being here today, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
just look over your shoulder.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my next guest, Assistant Fire Chief Ed Quinto from Capital City Fire and Rescue. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon.
Did I pronounce your name right, Ed?
Yes, you did. Perfect.
Great. So you're here to talk about Fire Prevention and Safety Month. October is Fire Prevention Month.
Yep.
What can you tell us?
Well, you know, this is the time of the year we start talking to people, the citizens of Juneau, about, first of all, making sure you change your smoke detector. We like to tell people, change it anytime you change the clock, which is coming up pretty soon. I believe
change
next
your smoke
month.
Detector completely?
Change your batteries.
Change your batteries.
At least
okay.
Change your batteries. Some of the smoke detectors, they recommend changing them every 10 years because there is a life expectancy on those things. So change your batteries at least, and if you think they're over 10 years old, you should at least replace them. And if you can't afford a smoke detector, the American Red Cross does provide free smoke detectors. They happen to be at Papa John's this Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. There'll be somebody, a representative from the American Red Cross. They'll be taking names, and then they'll come and visit your house, and they'll talk about fire prevention and help you install a free smoke detector. So if you don't have one, you can either contact the American Red Cross there's a phone number right there.
Let's see. It looks like 463-5713.
Yes. Contact at that number if you can't be at Papa John's. But they will be there at from 4 to 6 p.m. this Friday. So stop on by or give them a call. One of the other things that we'd like to talk about is along with the smoke detectors, make sure you have a working one. Just a little add on to that. Smoke detectors do save lives. There's a lot of times that I've gone to fires where the smoke detectors has gone off in the middle of the night. The occupants were asleep, smoke detector goes off, and they're able to get out. So they do save lives. But another thing you want to do is we have called two-way out. So plan on figuring two ways out of your place of residence. Sometimes your exit may be blocked. So practice with your family, not only during the daytime, but during the nighttime, an alternate way of getting out of the house. And also, once you get out of the house, you have a meeting place. So everybody knows they're all safe and in one spot. So that's always a good idea. And especially with kids, they either one, they go hide in the closet, or two, they just kind of run out and they might end up going to the neighbor's house or something like that. So teach your kids how to meet and get out two ways and then meet outside. We are going into the school system, not all of them, but some of the school system, the elementary. We're teaching kids about fire safety. We have firefighters bring the fire truck. They look at the fire truck. We talk about fire safety. So that's one of the things that we do. Another fire prevention that's really important for us is cleaning your chimney. You know, this Juneau, we have a tendency to burn wet wood. So because of that wet wood, it builds up a lot of creosote in the pipes. And as the creosote gets built up, it reduces the efficiency of the wood stove, but also it gets to the point where the creosote gets really dry and catches on fire. When it catches on fire, it sounds like a jet engine. And when you look at the stack, when it comes out, you have this massive air and fire coming out. It just blows right out. And a good way to prevent that is you can either have it done clean professionally. There's one or two companies that does that. And I don't remember offhand who they are. Or if you want to do it yourself, we have brushes you can rent out free of charge. We have one at the Juneau Fire Station, 820 Glacier Avenue. And we also have one by the airport, 1700 Crest Avenue. And they're free. We have various sizes and various lengths of rods to clean your pipe. So come on by, rent one, or call somebody to get it done. Those stack fires, they're really dangerous because the heat from the stack gets so hot it will burn the wood that's around it and actually cause additional fire, especially in the attic. And once it gets in the attic, it's hard to chase down. So we would definitely want to encourage people, clean your chimneys.
Okay. And how are you guys doing on volunteer firefighters right now?
We're always looking for people. Volunteering, you can volunteer for Juno. Right now, you can volunteer, come on in. We're always taking applications. When you come in, we start you off what we call scene support. Scene support is people that do not go into fires. They do everything else. They handle the hose outside. They get ladders. They help hook up to the hydrant. They get the equipment out off the fire truck and get it ready. There's a lot of work for a volunteer who is not trained to go inside the fire. I say that if you have one firefighter that goes in, you need at least 4 to 5 people outside to support them. And there's case in point, when we had that fire on Seward Street, we had lots of people. Fortunately, the neighbors came and helped move air pack bottles, get equipment, and they were real helpful, along with the police department were there to help us out. Unfortunately, we don't have enough manpower to handle a fire. We have 4 people on the first unit that arrives, 2 people on the engine and 2 people on the ambulance. Our additional units come from the other end of town, the other station, and that's also 4. So we only have 8 within the first 10, 15 minutes. You need about 20, 25 people to actually run a fire. So the more volunteers we can help get in there to help us, the better for us, for our safety and the safety of the citizens of Juneau. When you become a volunteer, you don't have to go in fires. You can stay outside or you can go through our Firefighter 1 training program. We will train you to be able to go into fires. When you go through our Firefighter 1 class, we teach you about air packs, putting out a fire, how to handle a hose, go up ladders, all that fun stuff that I get to do. So we need as many volunteers as we can. We also have what we call a cadet program. We started this a few years ago. It's going strong right now. The cadet program is any students that's between the ages of 14 to 18. And they meet a few times a month, a couple times a month. Actually, my 2 younger boys joined this year, which is nice. So these cadets, they don't go into the fires. They're basically like scene support. They're very limited on type of calls they respond to, but we train them at a young age. So eventually, hopefully, that when they turn 18, they can go into a Firefighter 1 program, and then they may pursue that as a career. But it's a good way for them to give back to their community and give these kids something to do. From 14 to 16, we do a lot of training, but they don't respond to calls. They just do strictly trainings. From age 16 to 18, they are allowed to go to calls. They get to go to car fires. They get to go to house fires. And then they help participate everything outside. Like I said, they don't go in the fire, so they're pretty safe that way. So if you're interested in becoming a volunteer, we have applications at the downtown fire station, which is located across from Federal Building. Our main headquarters at 820 Glacier Avenue. You can pick up an application there. And you can also go onto our website. It's the city website, juneau.org/fire. And there's a section that says volunteer application. Fill out the paperwork. There's some other paperwork that's required, background check, driving records. And then it all gets submitted, and I review all the applications, and then there's a process that we go through before we let you in. So it's not as bad as, like, joining the police department, but it's still we have to be careful of who comes into the fire department.
Of course, yeah. It sounds like a nice, rigorous process and a great opportunity for anyone who is interested in doing that as pursuing that as a career or as a volunteer.
Right.
It's a great employment opportunity. Yep. Anything else before we wrap
up? In the fire department, we also, since we're landlocked, when you join the fire department, if you have other interests, like, for instance, we have rope rescue. So if you want to do technical rope rescue, we have a fire department group that does that. You can join that. You'd like to do water rescue? Well, we have boats. So we go, like, rescue people on the Menhall River or the Menhall Lake. So we have our boats that go out and get those people. You can join those groups. We also have a hazmat team that deals with hazardous material. So there's other avenues, other things you can do other than just fight fires. So
Cool. Thanks for being here today, Assistant Fire Chief Ed Quinto from Capital City Fire and Rescue. October is Fire Prevention Month. Thanks again for talking with us today.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The birds' voices declare, in no uncertain terms, that autumn is once again upon us. In the golden sunlight of an October morning, a Lincoln sparrow sings energetically from a hedgerow. And soon, a fox sparrow chimes in. Both nested at higher latitudes or well up in the mountains last summer, but will spend September to May at lower latitudes or elevation. In October, massive movements of birds take place across the continent. The exodus of summer visitors to the tropics has given way to a surge from the north. The brambles twitch with sparrows. Blackbirds flock by the thousands. Bays and lakes sparkle with water birds, loons, grebes, dabbling and diving ducks. Many of them nested well to the north on tundra ponds. The sandpipers called dunlins now swarm south to winter along both coasts by the many thousands. Close behind are the predators, northern nesting merlins, peregrines, and sharp-shinned hawks, following south their winged prey. Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, a publisher of natural history books and birding guides. Critical Critters by Ralph Steadman and Carrie Levy is available now.
As part of New Member Month, KXLL presents Friday the 13th Horror Show, a haunted house themed party at the Hangar Ballroom, with live music from The Psychotics, Salisa Thole and Matt Barnes, with opener Jacob Picard. Sponsored by Alaska Music One. That's Friday the 13th, 7:30 at the Hangar Ballroom. Must be 21 or older to attend.
I put a spell on you.
40 years ago, the first barrel of oil flowed down the Trans-Alaska pipeline.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it goes shh. And I just woke up and I went, oil's in.
Midnight Oil is a new series and podcast from Alaska's Energy Desk about the pipeline that shaped the state. Visit ktoo.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's about 15 minutes to the top of the hour. My next guest is the one and only Annie B. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Shelley.
Annie Bartholomew, did you have a long walk over from the other studio?
It was brutal.
You could take the long way on a day like this.
Right? Oh my gosh, so gorgeous.
Annie, what's your title here at KTOO Public Media?
Arts, culture, and music producer, but I'm program director over at KXLL, and I kind of get to have my hand in a little bit of everything.
Yeah, you rock. I love the music on KXLL so much, all day, every day. Especially on Saturday afternoons around 5 o'clock.
Shell's Bells. It's my favorite show.
Mine too. Anyway, you're here today to talk about some of the events coming up this week. It's New Member Month, and it's also the time of year when KXLL organizes something spooky for the season. What do you got going on?
So it's Friday the 13th. Enough said. We are putting together, as part of New Member Month, a very spooky concert. It's got three artists I'm pretty excited about. Jacob Picard kicking it off at 7:30. You heard me right, 7:30. We're starting a concert early. Everybody who's tired out there, you don't have to stay out too late.
I love this idea.
Come have a party with us. Salisa Thole and Luke Weld are going to be playing together. Love them. And the Psychotics, who are a punk band around town, are going to be playing at a decent volume. They're very particular about that. They're like, we want to sound good. We don't want to be too loud. And we got Alaska Music One, who sponsored the entire event on sound. So these guys are going to sound phenomenal.
Yes, they will. Big thanks to them.
Yeah, it's a haunted house kind of theme.
Woo.
So we're going to be transforming the Hangar Ballroom into something a little bit scarier. That being said, if anyone out there has some skeletons in their closet, they're willing to let us borrow for an evening. More than
physical
welcome.
Physical skeletons, not the
physical
metaphorical kind.
Plastic, hoping for. But yeah, we're just going to have really fun get together to celebrate this scary night, scary month. We're not doing zombie walk this year. We thought we'd be indoors. I saw there's snow in the forecast.
There is?
Yep. So we're just going to have to rock out, Hangar Ballroom. We're also releasing a new sticker design from Emily Rodkey from High Tide Tattoo, which I'm excited about.
What does it look like?
Well, it's a skull. Cool. And it has a waterfall coming out of the eyeball.
Wow.
And it's all in her like super cool watercolor tattoo design.
That's
so
fantastic.
We're going to be giving those out to members in good standing. Cool. That's all part of the event. It's $10 to get in if you're a non-member, not in costume. $5 if you're a member and $5 if you're in costume. And you can use costume pretty liberally as long as you look scary, but not too scary to come in.
And you can kick in a little bit extra if you wanted to because it is new member month.
Yeah, and it's a fundraiser for KTOO Public Media and KXLL.
Great. What else? Anything else? Is that pretty much it?
Pretty much it.
That's a lot.
Spooktacular event.
Sounds fantastic. So let's go over the details one more time. Friday the 13th,
Friday
the 13th. 7:30 for the early birds. The band, where is it? Where will it be again?
It's at the Hangar Ballroom,
one of my favorite venues. Got Jacob Picard, the Psychotics. There was one other.
And Slisa Thole and Matt Barnes.
And we can see Rodkey's sticker.
Mm-hmm. New design from Emily Rodkey.
Premiering on Friday. Awesome. Anything else? Did I miss it? Did I miss anything?
No, that's it. Just don't miss it.
Great. All right, cool. Well, thanks, Annie B. Get back safe to the KXLL studio.
I'm going to stay real safe just for you, Shelly.
Cool. Annie B. in the afternoon on a Juno afternoon. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is Marcos Morehouse and your other host of a Juno Afternoon,
right.
Andy Klein.
How you doing,
host
Shelley?
Host versus host.
Yes.
Hi, welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So definitely. you're wearing your other hat today, Andy. You're communications manager, Alaskan Brewing Company. And Marcos, what's your role there?
I'm the master roaster at Heritage Coffee.
Okay, cool.
So we're here to talk about this very cool beer that we just got a really great accolade for, which is at the Great American Beer Festival, which is the biggest beer festival in the world. We just got a gold medal for our Heritage Coffee Brown Ale, which was, as the name suggests, a collaboration beer between Alaskan Brewing and Heritage Coffee.
Wow.
Where our brewers kind of came up with this kind of cool idea of using a mellower beer that is different than the usual base style for coffee beers. Coffee beers are often very dark. They're porters or stouts. So you're tasting a lot of the roasts of the malt combined with the roast of the coffee. They can tend to be a little bit bigger, heavier beers. Which is great. That's what those are. And our brewers, Darren Jensen, Tyler Lindquist, and a lot of our other brewers who worked on it, came up with the idea of using a brown ale so that when you're tasting the coffee in this beer, it's really the coffee that you're tasting. And that coffee was the result of the work that Marcos and his crew did in helping us select the coffees. It was a really cool process.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I mean, I love these projects, you know, two local companies, and it's a great project.
The one thing I was talking to Marcos about that was interesting the other day was that idea of what you guys were looking for to bring out of the coffee that would match up with the beer.
Yeah, well, we just wanted to pick a good coffee that had good characteristics of a nice sweetness, chocolatey, a little bit on the lower acidity level, which also the process of the cold brew coffee that you put into the beer, that really takes the acidity out of the coffee. So that way it was easier, you know, for the brewers to do what they do, you know, for the beer part of it, just good, nice, strong, concentrated coffee.
I like all those things.
Yes,
sweet,
right?
Sweet and chocolatey and
Doesn't
low
that
in acid.
Sound good? And it was really cool because I think what happened at GABF, the Great American Beer Festival, and why it got this gold medal was I think it was a recognition of that, of really going to the experts, the coffee experts, and saying and presenting them with the idea behind the beer and having them really come to the forefront of helping us pick out which coffee would work well. And then they did this other really amazing thing that we don't think anyone else has ever done, which is that we actually roasted some of our beer malts in the coffee roaster that they have right over at the roastery.
What?
Right. It's next level, right?
Yeah, it is. We researched it and couldn't find anyone else to ever do anything like that.
Wow, an Alaskan original.
Right. And so that was a little actually scary.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it was a learn as you go.
Because it's an actual fire risk, right? Because the malt has a lower flash point than coffee beans.
Yes.
So you have to really you guys were a little nervous.
Yeah, right? it was a little nerve-wracking at first, but it worked out great. I mean, those kind of projects that we do special like that, that's kind of out of the box, those are the really fun things to do.
So we have some here. Jelly.
Cool.
Should I open one? You want to taste a little beer?
I brought my own glass. Are you kidding me?
Yes, all right. There it is. I'll open that.
I'm glad you guys had the freedom to experiment and that both of you guys were able to collaborate, two local companies, like you said. I love the sound of that.
Oh, isn't that nice? Oh, man, just a
nice. Beautiful sound. Is that?
I mean, if you could just see it, it is like a commercial.
Fascinating. that's good radio.
So we don't get it over the board here.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, cheers, guys.
Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers, Marcos. Thank you for
Randy. Yep. Happy
help
Wednesday.
On this. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, this particular beer, it's been around for a couple of years now?
Just a couple. We brought it out as a seasonal about 3 years ago. We brought it out again as a seasonal this year as well. So, it's a new beer for us, you know, especially as a bottled product. We've been experimenting with coffee beers for a number of years, but this recipe we really hit on the last 3 years.
I do like how it's not a stout or a porter. It's got a coffee flavor, very distinct, but it's actually kind of a medium.
It's a medium, medium-bodied and medium-colored beer. You know, just this kind of classic brown ale, kind of like if anyone's ever had a nut brown ale. It's got a nutty characteristic. That really comes out in the malt, and that's a lot of what you guys also matched up with the coffee characteristic too. So I think that's kind of been the cool thing. Yeah. So even when this beer first came out, like in 2015, one of the trade magazines, it's a big one in the beer industry, is called Draft Magazine. And they named this as one of the four takeaway interesting trends that was coming out of this of 2015's Great American Beer Festival. Was they called this a next level coffee beer, this idea of really letting the coffee speak for itself and not making it a stout or a porter. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, great concept, great backstory, great use of local resources. How did it feel to win the award?
It was awesome. I mean, Alaskan Brewing has the privilege and is humbled by the fact that actually we've had the chance to win quite a few awards at that festival and quite a few awards internationally, and that's awesome. But there's just nothing like it. You know, you're at this thing. There's 98 categories. There's over 5,000 different beers were judged. And there were 89 different coffee beers in just the category we were in. So we're up against really stiff competition. And to be, you know, named by those judges as the top coffee beer, it was a real thrill. It was great. Yeah. And we're actually doing a competition, a homebrewing competition, this weekend, Saturday, And to celebrate that, Saturday night, we're going to have a party down at the Twisted Fish. It's called the Ecktoberfest. We're having an Oompa band come in. We've got these beautiful, big 33-ounce, 1-liter ceramic steins that say Ecktoberfest on them.
What?
Yeah, right?
This sounds awesome.
We brewed a special beer just for it. It's a Helles style. It's a traditional German-style beer called, and we're calling that Ecktoberfest Helles. And there'll be pretzels and brats and all that stuff, too. So bring your lederhosen and come down to the Twisted Fish. 8 o'clock is when the party is. And if you want to reserve one of these big steins, because they're limited in quantity, come and buy the tickets down at the brewery. We're selling tickets at the brewery at the tasting room. So that's just a tip for people if you want to go to that party on Saturday.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I grew up in a series of small German towns in the Midwest.
Well, there you go.
And I've attended many an Oktoberfest. This will be the first Oktoberfest.
All right.
Sounds
very
like it's going to live up to the hype.
Awesome. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for being here today.
Yeah,
thank you for
you.
The beer. Anything else you want to say in the last few minutes?
No, we're just Heritage Coffee Brown. It's out for about the rest of the month. So if you want to taste the gold medal winner. Coffee Brown. Look for it in stores or come to the brewery and buy a six-pack.
Excellent. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks, Shelley.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us here today on Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Deb Reidman, career services person, UAS point person for veterans at UAS, will be here. Allison Holtkamp will be here to highlight this weekend's Club Baby Seal comedy performance and much more. That's tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.